Good morning, or afternoon, or evening, whatever it may be for you right now. I just appreciate you gracing this podcast with your two ears. And if this isn't your first time here, make sure you're subscribing to the show in your podcast app so you don't miss an episode. And if you're liking what you're hearing, consider leaving a review if your platform lets you leave a review. It definitely goes a long way for making this content discoverable, and it just makes me happy to see what you guys are thinking of the show and any thoughts that you have. So this week is going to be part one of a two-part series on sleep. So you're going to get to listen into my conversation with the world-renowned sport sleep coach, Nick Littlehales. Nick has developed the R90 technique that has proven time and time again to improve sleep for elite-level athletes. This is outlined in great detail in his book, Sleep, The Myth of 8 Hours, The Power of Naps, and The New Plan to Recharge Your Body and Mind. He has quite the resume when it comes to working with elite athletes and coaches. Among those that he has consulted includes Team Sky, a British cycling team, Manchester United, Liverpool, Manchester City, New Zealand's Olympic rowing squad, and various coaches within the NBA, NFL, and MLB. This week, we talk about Nick's role in being a part of revolutionizing the British cycling's team's sleeping habits, as well as explain what sleep really is and debunk the myth of 8 hours a night. And you'll definitely want to be taking notes or listening to the episode multiple times. Let's get into it.
You're listening to the Science of Sports Recovery Podcast. Each week, we explore how to recover more efficiently from training so you can work out harder and realize your full potential. This is the Science of Sports Recovery Podcast.
Hey, Nick, it's great to have you on the show. I'm so excited for our conversation today.
It's a pleasure to be on your show, Jace. Are you keeping well today?
Yeah, I am. I'm doing very well. So it's bright and early here, mid-afternoon where you are. Yeah. But so we'll just dive right into it, Nick. Your journey to become the sport sleep coach, I know, is a little bit unique, and in fact that you didn't necessarily plan on this route, it just kind of happened to you. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that all came about? Like, how are you known as the sports sleep coach now?
I think it all started. I've been in the sleep industry most of my life in various different guises. Always loved sport, of course, but around the late 90s, I was an international sales and marketing director for a big international company and done lots of stuff and everything else, and probably had a little bit of a midlife crisis and just thought, you know, sleep, yeah, taken for granted, not a performance criteria, no definitive approach, lots of, you know, get your 8 hours and all that sort of stuff that nobody took any notice of, basically. And so I was off on a journey to do something else. I just happened to do something in that sort of interim period, was sponsor a local football club, put my, you know, the company's name on the shirts. That engaged me with one or two little functions. I ended up talking to Manchester United and Sir Alex Ferguson because of that, because they were local to my UK office, and the journey started, right? And
yeah,
along that little route, there was a sort of national England squad, one or two little things we were doing. A new manager came into the UK called Arsene Wenger, who had a completely different approach to, you know, human performance, football, athletes, and everything else. And that created a little moment when I actually was asked to go and speak to the first team squad at Arsenal. So I was kind of thinking, what actually am I doing? obviously, a workshop like that with a bunch of young male athletes talking about sleep, it was probably one of the weirdest moments but I can never remember looking back at that particular time. But it sort of, you know, the morning after I sort of woke up and the media had put two and two together, and, you know, coach in the world of sports is a common theme. And
yeah,
they put sleep and just went, you know, all these pampered footballers have got a sleep coach. And I thought, well, that's me. So maybe that's what I'm doing. So it sort of, from that particular point, it was trying to put together actually what I was doing. It was considered to be, you know, not very industry specific, because it was a bit maverick, a bit off the wall. But I was always fascinated with the, you know, get your 8 hours, don't eat too late, 16 to 18 degrees, and all this sort of stuff back then. That I just thought there must be a better way of redefining what this is all about to just help these athletes get from A to B. You roll that on 2 decades, a paradigm shift in behavior and technology and 24/7. And along that route, I've worked with a lot of organizations and individuals in all sorts of sports around the globe. And that sort of culminated in a technique, in an approach that you could adopt to any individual, any group. And probably where we sit now, Jays, is just the world seems to have really got involved with sleep. For probably two reasons. One, performance. One, because of the pressures of the modern day world. And also some of the consequences of not having a sort of defined approach to this, which can be mental health and well-being and all sorts of other aspects. So I think the word sleep is a bit deceptive because it describes something that we've been taking for granted and still do. So I think when you try to shift it, we kind of try to talk more about human recovery performance and sleeping in cycles and just changing the way that people perceive it. So I'm, I'm an elite sports sleep coach, but it's probably got less to do with the actual process of sleeping and more to do with what you do from the point of wake to the next point when you recover.
Sure. So it's not so much from what you do at night, but throughout the whole day. Why is it important to get that right for athletes?
I think there's one factor that I think has been examined over these last two decades is people worrying about it. And, you know, I'm not getting my 8 hours. I'm not getting enough sleep, or I'm not getting quality sleep, or I don't feel rested or energized when I do sleep. So it's kind of like it can be a waste of valuable time. And so I always thought, well, because I'm not academically qualified, it's just a journey of experience and research and, and, you know, hands-on experiences with individuals that you kind of think, well, when we go into a sleep state, the brain takes over. So we can't control that bit because the brain is putting us into the various stages of sleep and almost a paralyzed sleep state when we're in the deeper sleep stages. So we're out of control. So if we focus on what we do from the point of wake and throughout the four phases of the day and bring back some of the things that we should have learned at school about circadian rhythms and chronotyping and sleeping in a multiphasic way, pre and post environments and products, if we sort of try and bring all that together, we can probably help an individual understand that they can actually have a very proactive recovery program. So they're active in their recovery. Not, it's not doing nothing. Like they can change the way it looks. So when you started to see, you know, the 24/7 media world of sports sort of really start to kick in and games and events being played at all different times and the increase in schedules, you just thought, well, there's no way you could slot in the norm into that.
Yeah.
So you've got to give them another approach, but don't make it up. Don't sort of try and just create something that sounds great. It's got to come from some sort of basis of natural human performance. And so, and it's always nice to change the language, I think, Jays, isn't it? It's so that somebody goes, oh, you know, go to sleep. I'll see you in the morning. Have a great night's sleep. It's, well, let's start thinking about that slightly differently, because sleep is all about patterns and rhythms and cycles. The sun rolls around our planet. It doesn't give a damn about our behavior as human beings. So as long as human beings keep, you know, desynchronizing with that process, you're going to get consequences. So maybe it's a really good time just to reflect on that and see if we could not necessarily sleep more or sleep less, but actually try and look at human recovery in a different context. So the bit that makes them interested is, can they stop wasting time doing it? Can they make it more productive? Can they stop worrying about it? And that sort of reveals a more natural process is exactly what it should be.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I think those, you hit on a lot of points that when I'm talking with athletes, they have questions about sleep. It's like, how long do I need to sleep? And can I do it shorter, but more efficiently? Yeah. I think that's kind of the main questions that anybody wants to hear. Because like you said, we view sleep in its natural term as kind of a waste of time. Yeah. Like, I'll sleep when I'm dead. You know, you've absolutely heard that saying.
Yeah. Snoozers for losers. Eat, you know, sleep when you're dead. I mean, a lot of the clients over the years just go, hey, Nick, could you come up with a technique or something or a device that I could just like get all this over and done with in 20 minutes? You know?
Yeah.
And I go, well, we can try and find that within the norm, but that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make it efficient. We're trying to make it smart. We're trying to make it uncomplicated. And, this is what's going to happen today. Got a solution for that. That's what's going to happen tomorrow. Got a solution for that. So it's kind of just like a little subconscious thing that goes in the back of your mind that when anybody's asked me, you know, obviously you're an elite sports sleep coach, Nick, because you must sleep brilliantly every night. And you slept well last night, didn't you? I said, look, I gave up thinking like that a long, long time ago. What you have is a little subconscious technique that's going on around your every 24/7 rolling process. I don't think Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I just think it's a rolling 24-hour process. So when I wake up in the morning, I'm just thinking about these little things I can do that helps me and my brain reveal good recovery. Now, as long as I'm doing that and also dealing with the out-of-control outside influences, you know, some things are positive, want to take advantage of it. Some things are maybe negative and I want to control that a bit better. This is what 24/7 is all about. You're not in control of it. So if I've just got something like, that's going to happen, didn't realize that, so what do I do here? Oh, that's going to happen, want to take advantage of that. That's cool.
Yeah.
And as long as I've got that, then I know that I am getting the most consistent and sustainable levels of recovery as I possibly can. But once I get to that point of not worrying about it, then suddenly, strangely enough, because you can sleep anywhere, anytime, on anything in any way, that's what humans do on this planet. Suddenly, you just become, it's like a, you know, the light bulb going on, the door opening, and you just go, why have I been trying to do this like that before? It sort of creates all the sort of counterproductive consequences of, did you not sleep well last night? How many awakenings did you get? You know, do you feel energized in the morning? The fact of the matter is, no athlete or any high achiever or anybody on this planet is going to wake up in the morning and go, I didn't sleep well last night. I'm not going to work. I'm not flying a plane. I'm not being a surgeon. Yeah. I'm not being a nurse. I'm not being a politician.
Exactly.
They're not going to do that. I'm not being a parent and taking my kids to school. It's, you know, it may well come one day, yes, you know, but I just can't see that it's ever going to be one of those high performance factors that determines exactly what you're going to do today. It's more about that sort of behavior journey of, this is what's going on and how do I react to it?
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. And we'll get a little bit more into details about what Nick's talking about with the pre-sleep, what to do in sleep and that. But before we get to that, I do want to dive into a little bit of your team with, or your time with Team Sky, the British Cycling Club. Cause I don't know, Nick,
you like
if you've
cycling?
Read Atomic. What?
Are you a cyclist yourself?
I'm not, but the reason this story stands out to me is, are you familiar with the book Atomic Habits?
I am, since you mentioned it in our pre-briefing, yes.
Okay, yeah. So James Clear writes about the story about the, you know, performance director at this British cycling team. And before this guy got there, they were pretty pitiful. I mean, over the 100 years, I think they had one Olympic gold. And then in his 5 years, his thing was marginal gains. So little things that they could do to improve their team, like example, working with Nick on their sleep routine, washing their hands correctly so they don't get viruses, you know, making sure that their bikes are, you know, absolutely clean every time after they ride them, just little marginal gains. And over the, you know, 10 years, then they won 178 world championships, 66 Olympic golds, and 5 Tour de France victories. So that's clearly like his philosophy works. You were a part of that. And I want to know like what they, why they came to you, or you, you know, to them, how that came about. And then what were you telling them about sleep specifically?
Wow. That's an introduction to a question, isn't it? I think yes, the whole journey, just like bumping into Manchester United and Alex Ferguson back in the late 90s, and then wandering on that route, it's always been a challenge because it's never been consistent. So it's always been little pockets of elite sport where something comes up and they go, oh, we'll involve Nick in that. And so I should have given up almost every year along that journey. But every now and again, something happened to just keep me involved. British cycling was one. And as you mentioned it, a five-year strategy put a British rider on the Tour de France podium. And, you know, British cycling was just nowhere. You know, I think they were just sharing one bike and it had a basket on the front, you know. So they were able to, with the funds of Sky, which is where Team Sky came from, to look at how they could make that happen. And they knew, as far as products are concerned, pedals, and gears and saddles and the frames and all that sort of stuff, then every other team, principally the Germans and the Australians, and would be, they've all got that, right? The bit that really is going to matter is the engine that's on it, the human being. So that's when trying to find a way of like, is it a helmet? Is it a this? Is it a that? They just went, well, maybe if we can find tiny little things, they'll all aggregate up to an overall better performance. Yeah. So they couldn't ignore one of the largest chunks of any rider's time, which is when they were asleep. Mm-hmm. So the clinical side of sleep is very intrusive, right? And they very much look at disorders and the clinical environment and all that sort of stuff, which is absolutely great. Yeah. But what they were looking for was, can we find some blind spots, some little hidden things, those aggregation of things within the world of sleep that could add up? And is it practical? Now, I was the only sort of guy who was wandering around at that time, right? So I really didn't have any competition, okay? So they contacted me and I got engaged. The as you pointed out, it's quite strange in the world where we find ourselves today about teaching athletes how to wash their hands. Principally, all that was about, you know, you start a grand tour like a Tour de France or a Vuelta or a Giro d'Italia or something like that. And at the start of the process, if you're going into different hotels and moving around everywhere, if you pick something up, it's probably going to reveal itself in the second week when you don't want it to. So it was kind of, I have to say, we started to look at all sorts of stuff, you know, techniques, chronotypes, training programs, sleeping habits, looking at the individual riders' homes, the kind of products that they were using, because there was no consistency. You know, they've all got the coaches and the nutritionists and the Lycra suits and the air this and the helmet, but they all sleep in different environments, you know, some with their pajamas on, some with their boxers on, some with partners, some with not, some in the countryside, some in the cities. So we tried to get some sort of more consistency with that and bring some of those familiarization things along to the actual, the whole process of this strategy. And the one key thing that came out of it was trying to familiarize the environments on a grand tour. So every night for 3 weeks, different environments, they're not, you know, hotel rooms and things like that. So we started off playing with one or two things, and that culminated in actually creating an individual sleep kit for each particular rider. So that had the smells and all the little things, the postural care, the balance, the comfort. And literally, they're going into the hotel, unzip it, plonk it on the floor, rider gets in it, wax out the best recovery they can, hops up, zip it back up, take it to the next hotel. Yeah. So the mindset, then you started looking at high particle filters in the room for an hour to drag all the muck out of the air, because breathing is really important for recovery and sleep. Then you're sort of anti-backing all the surfaces to protect from viruses, and going around with this high-powered hand Hoover where all the maids don't go to get all the stuff out the room. We started to put things on top of the mattresses inside that. And then we just thought, forget that, because that mattress has been there for years, and hen party.
Yeah.
And so literally from the mindset, it's almost like having a little nap or controlled recovery period if you're in the peloton in the middle of it. Yeah. Because you're being dragged along by the peloton, you know? So when you look at the lead riders who are going to win, they're almost having a nap in the peloton, because they're surrounded by all their other team riders. They've been protected from the wind and everything else, and they're almost being dragged along at 40 kilometers by the peloton. If they're up the front, it's hard work. That's why within a team, you've got the ones who take all the, you know, the aggressive stuff and have to push it. But the lead rider is always being protected. So they reveal that winning moment over 3 weeks. So it's kind of like when you start talking about naps and controlled recovery periods and multi-cycle sleeping patterns and familiarization and just stupid little things like, you know, in those crazy days of when you get into the aggregation of marginal gains, right? It can become almost OCD, because if everything can add up, then everything can add up. So you start looking at everything, and then you just go, what about how do they wash their hair? What do they wash their hair in? You know, what's the depth of the carpet in the training sense? It's creating friction on their training shoes. You know, you suddenly just go, whoa. So you do get a little bit intense about it. But to give you one example, which will probably put a smile on your face, is that, you know, I sat there with the sleep kits on the floor, and there's all the whole team around, you know, Dave Brailsford. So Dave Brailsford is now, and all these top guys, Shane Sutton from the Australian coach, and all sorts of things. And I just said, look, we're looking at these sleep kits, which I had to design, you know, everything about it. So I designed all that for them, for them to use. And he said, like, the strange thing is my actual personal profile is if I put fresh bed linen on my bed, but not only is it cool and fresh, but I also think I want to get in it. And I also think I'm probably going to have a good night's sleep, right? Now, that not might apply to everybody, right? But it certainly does to me. And we sort of looked at that and went, so if we get this kit, we put it in the room and we put fresh linen on it, so they've got a fresh bed every night for 3 weeks. Then while they're riding and they're all thinking, what are we going to do at the end of this ride? What's going to happen? Because they have all sorts of things to deal with. And when we get off the bikes and we start all that preparation, it's kind of rather than thinking, oh, I've got to go up to that room and try and sleep in there. So they tried to do other things to avoid that, because it wasn't their room. It didn't smell like their room. It wasn't their room. It was somebody else's. Suddenly they were going, I want to go up there because the air's fresh. It's nice and clean. Everything else, my stuff's sitting there, is a brand fresh bed, and I'm just going to go in, curl up, bang, do it, get up and go. Right. So we didn't even have to try and test it, you know, like track the data, sleep data, whatever. There's no point, because everybody just went, love it. Just love it. Just love it.
Yeah.
Right. So
awesome.
I think although I was very much on the sort of fringes of the main objectives of performance and riders and equipment and technique, I was sort of in there in and around it, actually with something that appeared to be the real sort of game changer. Because when they ever sort of talked about it, it was always about those obvious things, nutrition and techniques and pedals and bikes and this. And so it was like, suddenly they had something they'd never talked about before, which is called sleeping. So when you hit and you rattled off, because British Cycling was managing Team Sky, then British Cycling, road and track, male and female, Paralympic cyclists, all of those people, we all benefited from the whole approach that Team Sky was, we were applying to Team Sky. And so when you wandered into London 2012, it was just an amazing, you know, you've got better stats than I have. But it was just an amazing time of a Tour de France winner, time trialers, breaking world records again, which they thought they'd never be able to do. And in the background, all of these people were actually sleeping on their own sleep kits, not actually sleeping on the beds in hotels. Just absolutely crazy. But
Yeah, provides consistency though.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just an amazing time of realizing that actually there was a large proportion. We hear it all the time. It's a third of your life. It's 8-9 hours a day. You probably spend more time doing this than anything else, and yet we just don't even think about it. So I think all that process was just let's think about it. And I just happened to be the person who's actually been wandering around for maybe a decade thinking about it.
Yeah.
So that's why I got involved. And it was just simple, logical, crazy stuff that elite sports had just never thought about before.
Yeah.
But fortunately, unfortunately, I think the state of British cycling at the time and everything else around it did create a unique set of circumstances where they would just have to look at everything. And that's probably the only reason I was involved in that, because that was the strategy they created.
Yeah. Well, cool. Yeah, I think you gave them the home field advantage in sleep. You know, we talk about, especially in, it's probably with every sport, but I'm in endurance sports. And when you have a meet or a race in near your hometown and you get to sleep in your own bed and then go race, like it's so much better than just trying to sleep in a hotel, like you said, where you don't know how everything was cleaned and all that kind of stuff. But you talk about in your book, Sleep, you talk about that the ideology of kind of 8 hours is misguided, and we should start talking about sleep and cycles. And you mentioned, you know, 90-minute cycles. Can you explain more about like what are you doing in that cycle? What's kind of the body doing, and why should we think about it in cycles instead of time?
I think you know, anybody in the clinical area sort of might get the impression that we're trying to coach people to sleep less or to ignore this 8 hours. There's not. I think what I really struggled with is that if within the 24-hour process, a human being should be, a human adult should be, have some sort of 8-hour period presenting themselves to sleep to allow the brain to go through these different stages, rejuvenate and replenish. If that's the guide, right, 30-odd% of the 24-hour period, that's where the sort of 8 hours comes from. That's fine.
Yeah.
But how do you tell that to a nurse who works night shifts? Mm-hmm. She has to sleep during the day. So that doesn't make sense to her about sleeping at night in a monophasic block. She's actually working, right? So you kind of think, well, we can't do that. Then you start looking at elite sports, and they've got training sessions, they've got game times, they've got this, they've got traveling and everything else. And particularly in the US, you know, with things like, you know, NHL, NBA, they're on coaches traveling for 16, 17 hours going to games through time zones. It's just like, so how do you actually apply that? And if you look at research that says if you should get around 8 hours, but if you only get 6, you're likely to, you know, have a short life and things are going to go wrong.
Yeah.
You sort of think, well, that's a worrying factor I've already got in my head. So it's kind of, I can't really do it. And even if I allocate 8 hours, you know, I'm sort of there lying in bed and sometimes I fall asleep quickly. Sometimes I can't get to sleep. Yeah. Sometimes I wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, going to the toilet, or I've just woken up, got thoughts in my head and can't get back to sleep. Sometimes I wake up early. So actually all I'm doing is actually allocating theoretically an 8-hour block with maybe an hour before and an hour afterwards to sort of, you know, come out of it and go into it. So it's probably a 10-hour period. And yet the majority of time, I can't apply it. And the majority of time, I don't feel energized and replenished by it. So I think when you had a world of 9 to 5 and weekends off and no tech and no 24/7, probably got away with it. Okay. But when you shift it into the last couple of decades, and when I was first coaching in the light out, there wasn't such a thing as an Ironman or a triathletes were just like weird things over there somewhere. It just wasn't there. So and extreme sports and all sorts of stuff and playing 4 times a week and different. So I think we've just, the bit was, how on earth am I going to be able to talk to a bunch of athletes and change their perception? And so inside a clinic, a lot of professors and clinicians I'd ever bumped into and worked alongside in so many different directions, they would look at a 90-minute cycle. It's called a polysomnograph. And it takes the brainwave patterns off your frontal lobe, and you're wired up in a clinic, and they would look at that period of going through all the various stages because of your brainwave patterns. Then they'd look at the next 90 minutes, right? So they're not looking at it in one big block. They're looking at it in a 90-minute cycle. Because within that period, the brain will hop in and out these different stages, light sleep, REM sleep, and all that sort of stuff. And there's sort of a balance. And then it'll start to change, because as you're going through the process, there's things changing. So the deeper sleep stages are normally revealed in the two cycles before 12 midnight and the two cycles afterwards, like between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. The cycles between 2 a.m. sort of into sunrise is more about light sleeping. So that's why they look at it like that, as to when the client falls into a sleep state, if they can see. So 5 90-minute cycles is 7.5 hours. There's the eight, but it's five cycles. Now, so we're not moving away from this eight. We're just saying there's five cycles. We also know that up until electric light came along into our world, humans never tried to sleep in one block. So this 8 hours is fine, but it's concentrated on monophasic block sleeping. But we never used to do that. It was always twice a day, three times a day, biphasic, triphasic, multiphasic. So because we're more aligned with the circadian rhythms and light, dark, and temperature shifts, we slept like that. So it'd be quite normal to wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and be active for a cycle or so, right? So it's only the certain things that have been changing our behavior. So that, you know, it's a big long answer to your question, but what it was is, the strange thing is way back then, the length of a football game in the UK is 90 minutes long with a break of 15 minutes in the middle. So immediately we've got a cycle with a break, like a stop period before you do something again. You can't go a full 90 minutes and all that sort of stuff. But it's sort of what we're trying to do is get five cycles in every 24 hours, because that equals 7.5 hours. We want five 90-minute cycles. So maybe we can get all five 90-minute cycles nocturnally, like we have been doing, or we can get those five cycles within that 24-hour process. So maybe four cycles nocturnally and define it a little bit. Maybe a midday cycle, maybe a late afternoon cycle to protect the phases of the day. So suddenly it just enabled us to think five cycles a day, 35 cycles in 7 days. That's what we're targeting. That's what we're looking at. Yeah. And it's a combination of back-to-back 90-minute cycles and also shorter 30-minute cycles, which we call CRPs, used to be called naps. So it's about, then you start thinking about a little. So what we start with, instead of just go, I wake up in the morning, there's only so many hours left, I need to try and sleep, repeat. What we then started doing is, like, in every 24 hours, we have a consistent wake time, because that's what sunrise is all about. That's what the brain loves. That's why it's synchronized this process. Consistent wake time, chop your 24 hours up into 90-minute slots, gives you 16 timings, four phases of the day. What you do in the first phase of the day into midday, what you do into the second phase into early evening, what you do in the third phase into midnight, and then midnight into there. And it's all about the first 90 minutes of your day, big, big, important stage, right? That sets you up for how this is going to go. And then
when you say the 90 minutes of your day, are you talking, you know, midnight to 1:30, or are you talking like from the moment you wake up?
Because it's sort of, it's almost, I learned something from, I'm not a military person. I don't have any, but I got asked to work with some Marines and military people. Okay.
Yeah.
And I was just treating them just like everybody else, you know, because that's it.
Yeah.
But what came about is something they call a 180. And it was because you see so much stuff that you do not want to be hanging around with you all the time, right? You've got to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And I might not describe it, but it was literally just go up to the wall, try to dump everything in that wall that you've got in your head of what you've just seen or what you've just experienced, turn around completely as a 180 and walk away from it. It doesn't mean to say that those things are going to disappear, but what it does say is you've got to leave them somewhere. So I think the point is you've got a nice consistent wait time. You use that all the time, because there's no point changing it, going to bed early or sleeping later and stuff like that. It's about rhythm and patterns and 24 hours. So my consistent wake time is 6:30. So I will wake anytime, 5:45, 6 o'clock, 5 past 6, 10 past 6, whatever it is. The alarm's just on at 6:30. Now, the first 90 minutes between 6:30 and 8 o'clock. That's when, and this is why it's so important to understand your chronotype, because mm-hmm. it's very easy for morning types like me to get up, to hydrate, fuel up, bowel and bladder, mental challenges, loads of light, so I can become a sleep coach by 8 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
For a PM, boy, they're probably going to be snoozing and snoozing and snoozing because they're getting brought into the day. So what we say is the first 90 minutes or the first hour of your day from the point of wake, consistent wake time, forget what's just happened. Did you sleep well? Don't care. How many wakes? Don't care, right? It's done. Yeah. So now hydrate, fuel up, go out, challenges, bowel and bladder, get on with it. Every 90 minutes, just point your brain in a different direction for 2 minutes. And change the visualization. It's a mind space. It's a moment. It's a little bit of thing that just helps you and your brain going through this world. And then if you're like me as an AMer, I do not want to be falling asleep at 8, 9 o'clock at night, which is what AMers do. They wake early and go to sleep early. So the way I protect that is I sleep 4 cycles at night, 6 hours, between 12:30 and 6:30, my consistent work. Mm. Lots of little tiny breaks, or you know, wouldn't even know I was doing them, Jay, you know? You wouldn't even know they were going on, right?
Yeah.
But I put a 30-minute cycle in late afternoon because that's 30% of the 90, because I don't want to do a full 90. Yeah. I just want to, you know, nap it out. I just want to CRP. Okay. I'm not even trying to sleep.
Is that time consistent where you put in that 30-minute?
It is consistent because I've been doing it for a while, right? But for most who start it, there might be a bit of variability because they've got other behavioral things going on. But once you go between 5 and 5:30, I have got a very important meeting, Jay. So you want to do a podcast with me, but you can't do it in that half hour because I've got something else on, right? And that something else on is my 30 minutes. Because whether I fall into a little microsleep or not, the more I've been doing this and the more we coach this in, the brain starts to let you know, right, you know your little 30 minutes later on today at 5 o'clock, Nick, brain's telling me, I tell you what, we're probably going to microsleep you, right? And you start to feel it. Yeah. So I might go somewhere a little bit more private, or I might just make sure I'm not going to fall off the edge of a cliff, you know, just because I can feel it. But even if I don't feel it, I still do it, right? And it could be meditation, breathing, visualization, change. What happens is that takes the pressure off phase three. So I'm not rushing around in phase three, trying to get everything done, shut my tech down, get my blue blocker glasses on, try not to eat too late, shut you this, that, because I've got to get to bed. By 11, I create some space.
Sure.
And if they're in that process from the point of wake, that didn't go very well last night, conversation with your brain, don't matter. Crack on. Get it up, put it up. Nice, nice, nice. Bang, 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 bang. Yeah. So when I sort of go, right, I'm going to present myself to sleep now. Bing, bang, bong, curl up, brain takes over. And maybe we've got more chance of going through those 6 hours without disturbances and grabbing that deeper sleep stuff in the early cycles and not being woken out of the lighter sleep cycles. And I think once you start thinking like that, it becomes, you know, we hear about, you know, 5 a day vegetables and fruits and good balanced diets and all sorts of stuff that we hear. Yeah. Probably the unknown human performance success factor is actually getting your 5 a day cycles rolling 24/7, because then that becomes, you just stop worrying about it.
Let me ask you this. And for those, first of all, I want to point out, you mentioned a consistent wake time is, you know, above all, kind of one of the main things that you need to do, correct? And then you mentioned the 5 cycles of 90 minutes. You know, so whether you do that all at night or throughout the day, does everybody need 5 cycles, or do like elite athletes or athletes that are training really hard, is there any time where they would need 6? Because
in sort of all the conversations over the years, you're trying to move from this mindset of get your 8 hours at night, which sounds even a little bit crazy when you look at the multi-schedules of the modern world, right?
Yeah.
So you're trying to move from there to a different place. And that sometimes takes a little bit of time to sort of get your head around it. What we're saying is, as you've mentioned it, in the sports that you're in with endurance. So I've got a cyclist who's doing one challenge, which is riding around Ireland.
Yeah.
No sleep, on a bike, you know, race across America, worked with a number of clients, you know, 13 days on a bike. They're racing against time, and they're not making it easy. They're not, not just going down the tarmac flat track. I mean, they're making this hard. So what you do is you use the same process to create a multi-phasic recovery program for that particular individual for that particular period. Right?
Okay.
So what you can do is you can bring them into it by changing those cycles, you know, moving them around a little bit to suit what's going to happen. They go into it. Sure. It's like pre, during, and post. They go into it and able to smash it, and then they come out of it and go back to a normal approach, right? Single-handed round-the-world sailors, you know, at sea for 3 months on a boat, stripped out. They can only sleep when about 25 things are in place. So they might they would adopt a complete multi-phasic approach where they might have to, you know, be awake on deck for 24 hours, 48 hours, you know, because they can't leave the deck. It's too dangerous. So if you go into things like that with the mindset of, I've got to get my 8 hours, you wouldn't be able to do those things. Surgeons, pilots, you know, you just wouldn't be able to do it. So I think all it does is just, you find it a little bit better, like, whoa, here is a challenge, okay? Now, what we'll do, let's go Uberman. Let's go, which is 6 times a day. Let's go 4 times a day. Let's go 3 times a day. So we can, we know where the best place is to recover in that 24 cycle is. So maybe 2 cycles between 10 p.m. and 12 p.m., we're likely to get the deeper sleep stages. 1 or 2 cycles between 12 and 2 a.m., we're likely to get it. And balance it out and really try to make those 30-minute cycles. You know, you probably heard about it. Pilots tend to work to 26 minutes, you know, to try and get some recovery on long-haul flights and things like that. So it's kind of, once you start to get that, you think, well, suddenly the concept of there is your challenge. You want to do it and you want to smash it. But your mindset coming into it about recovery has changed so that you can really take full advantage of it. So the ride on Races Across America, we just map it all out and go, there's your moment, off the bike, hit the deck, 20 minutes, fetal position, on the floor, don't even take your helmets off type of thing. Bang, back on the bike, go, right? Don't do it half an hour later, because if you do it half an hour later, that we're going to miss it, right? So we do it there, we do it there, we do it there, bang. And then you've got, you can work out, I think there's different people out there with different things, right? We're all a bit different. So there are some normality to this, but I think if you found that you could really function in a healthy way on maybe, you know, 6 hours a day, right?
Yeah.
Then you can find this out, right? So if you've always got this mindset, I need to get my 8 or sleep 9 or go to bed early or catch up and this and that. If you've got 9, you really don't know what is your optimum recovery program. You don't know how far you could push it for a period. So a lot of people get into addictive behavior trying to force themselves to sleep. Yeah? With sleeping tablets and melatonin supplements and all sorts of stuff, okay? They're forcing themselves into sleep, right? And when you get into that particular area, it becomes really dangerous, right? So you don't want to be getting into that area at all, right? But it's so easy to do that with this process. So before a major event, right, never mind in sport, you know, my partner, my girlfriend, my boyfriend is, you know, we're about to have a baby. And am I doing my 8 hours quite happily when my partner's in hospital about to give birth to my first child? Am I? I'm not. I'm bouncing around the room, aren't I? Completely wired on adrenaline and everything else and excitement. I'm just going, there's no way I'm sleeping. So I think even in the world of sport, choosing your moments when not to sleep or try to sleep and using other recovery techniques can be an absolute game changer. Is actually not trying to sleep pre and post something, because it's just, there's too much going on. You don't want to be forcing yourself to sleep. You could go on about that for hours, but there you go.
Cool. So you talked about optimizing like your pattern once you wake up. All right, this part is over. We'll finish the conversation next week. But if you found value in this episode, please consider giving us a review on iTunes. And if you haven't already, subscribe. So now, so you don't miss any important topics later. If you have any questions or suggestions for the show, please send them my way. I'm most responsive on Instagram at jcheese, J-A-E-C-H-E-E-S-E. CHEESE, or you can email me directly at jace@scienceofsportsrecovery.com. Talk soon.